Welcome to Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from Berlin, live from Online Educa Berlin. The sounds of technology-enhanced learning, the sounds of talking, the sounds of drinking, the sounds of debate. We're bringing you all its best from the Online Educa Conference. We've got a great programme lined up today. We heard broadcast flows you heard yesterday. We went out 11 o'clock to 11:45. There's so many people we want to talk to today. We're extending this programme. It's a Sounds of the Bazaar special. We're going to be running for the full next hour through to 12 o'clock. My name's Graham Atwell. Sadly, I can't be here for the full programme because I've got to do a session myself. But we've got a brilliant crew here who are going to be bringing you this programme. There's Klaus, Judith, Dirk and Jen. They've been working all over this morning, getting the running order, sorting out. We've got guests lined up here. It's absolutely fabulous. They've got all the way through the snow, about 10 centimetres of snow fell in Berlin yesterday, which caused a bit of chaos. I'm going to hand over now to Jen, who's going to be telling you something about what's on this morning's programme.
Okay, this morning we've got no less than 13 speakers, assuming they can all get here because of the snow. We're hoping to have Doug Belshaw. He was actually on first. Can't find Doug, but I'm sure he'll turn up. We've got Jeff Stead, who's going to be talking, we hope, about ethics. Then at 11:15, we've got Jay Cross, followed by Jan Markovic and Grania Canola on open education resources. More Sec is coming to talk about some of the projects in Africa. Kaira from the UN. Do we have a surname for Kaira? I don't have it. I must check that one out. Linda Castaneda, who's going to talk to us about her madhouse of ideas in Spain, followed by Carl Royal on game-based learning, and Heike Philp, who might actually be on a bit sooner, going to talk to me about language learning and the technologies she's using to do that, and Fred De Vries on audio augmented reality. And finally, Russell Stannard on the use of video in teacher training. I've also been asked by the organisers to say this is the biggest ever online educa in Berlin. There's over 108 countries participating, over 2,000 delegates, despite the snow. But we are actually going to start off with Judith. Judith, do you want to talk to Jeff?
Hello and good morning. I have Jeff next to me, Jeff Stead. We are going to talk about informal ethics, and I would like to ask Jeff to introduce himself.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stead. I'm originally from South Africa, but I've been living the last 20 years in England, in Cambridge, and I'm in charge of a team of teachers and technologists, and we build learning tools. That's what we do.
Okay, Jeff, you are doing a session about informal ethics this morning. Maybe you can tell us what informal ethics are or is.
Okay, so in my context, we specialize in working with the non-traditional learners. We do learners at work, work-based. We do informal learning. We do young people in prisons. We do rural communities. We specialize in trying to use technology where the mainstream learning isn't working very well. And in that context, and we do a lot of mobile learning of this type. And in that context, the ethics are a slightly more fluid thing because the ethics are very interwoven with context. So for example, when the learning isn't working anyway, then the ethics of bringing some technical intervention and transforming it so that it does work, it's all based on the results. So it's based on the success. It's not based on the philosophy of whether it's a good idea to intervene or not, because what's there is currently broken. So I guess in a way the ethics is much more contextually based than some of the discussion that I'm hearing around here from a more traditional partners involved in university and school education.
Okay, I heard John Traxler talking about informal user-generated ethics. Is it kind like this?
It is kind of like this. So in some scenarios, we work very much with the learners themselves, and we get the learners to try and evolve their own set of ethics or protocols. So for us, we're doing a lot of mobile learning. We're taking phones into places, or we're putting things onto people's own phones. And it's quite common, especially with older learners, to get them to solve the problem for themselves, to engage with the problem for themselves. And it is a little bit like that. I think John's background is very much on the research, and research is bound by quite strict ethics about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Mine is more pragmatic about... We're being moved delicately to the side by the ever glamorous Graham. My take is more pragmatic. It's about tools for teachers and how teachers can help make their session work better. So I think he has a stricter framework around the way he discusses ethics than the way I do. Mine is very much results based, and it's more about the helping teachers make appropriate choices and giving them a wider set of tools.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for the moment. Please come back to us after 12 and after you finished your session about informal ethics. And we will have a recorded interview later, which will be available as podcast then. Thank you very much for the moment.
Happy streaming. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, next we'll have Jen speaking with Heike Philp on something like video conferencing in classroom.
Hi, Heike.
Hello there.
I understand you're a language teacher.
Yes, Jen.
So what are you doing that's different in language teaching?
Well, we're using technology increasingly at a rate, well, it's been around for quite a while, that research has gone into how to use technology in language learning. Actually, the Eurocal, computer-assisted language learning organization, has been founded in the 60s, will you believe it or not?
And how far ago? I mean,
yeah,
really?
It's four decades. And Calico, which is the American pendant to Eurocal in Europe, same, about four decades. So language learning and technology is not a new subject, but what we're facing now is a little bit of a revolution in that area. And that's what I'm doing at the moment, some development in language learning in real time via the internet.
Tell me more about real time language learning then.
Well, the most common one that is known now is to use Skype, being able to talk to native speakers abroad. That could also mean that the native speaker in his own country, which is the teacher, can make use of the situation we're seeing. Normally, a language teacher in his own country has not a lot of value. For example, me as a German teacher, I'm paid well in Japan, but if I teach German in Germany, it's just, yeah. So the opportunity to use Skype in order to teach German to Japanese in Japan is a fantastic opportunity. And the same happens then when you step up the technology, which is virtual classroom technology, or even virtual worlds. Fantastic opportunity.
Do you just want to tell me in a couple of sentences about what you've been doing in Second Life?
Well, we've just completed a European-funded project called Avalon, and Avalon stands for Access to Virtual and Action Learning Life Online. And it is all about how to utilize virtual worlds. In our case, it was Second Life a lot. How to utilize these worlds for language, practicing the language. Language acquisition itself is something that would perhaps be in a more traditional way in a school. But then the opportunity to practice the language with native speakers that you can meet in Second Life in the streets, not having to know them before, but you go to virtual London and you hear English spoken in the streets. It's a fantastic opportunity.
Sounds great. How do you find out more about the project? You have a website address for us?
Yes, and we have, it's called avalonlearning.eu. Yeah, we also have a beautiful community of language educators on the avalon-project.ning.com site. And we're more than happy to welcome practitioners, also myself. I'm now a sim owner, what's called, on EduNation. So we welcome language educators into this community to help us develop this field, which has now got a wonderful start with the Avalon project. And now what we need to do is we need to put this into practice and share this know-how and really, you know, work on the tools that we are developing in Second Life.
Okay, that was great. Thank you very much and good luck with the project.
Thanks, Jane.
Okay, right now I will talk to Fred de Vries about audio augmented learning. tell me, what is audio augmented learning?
This is a nice catchy word, but what the reality is that we are running pilots where we give our students in cultural science, we give them smartphones and they do their field trip using their smartphone. And everyone knows the augmented reality with the use of the maps and see all the interesting places. But we are trying to use it for in learning scenarios where students are doing their field work. For example, I'll give you an example. In Florence, they walk around, they observe, and they don't look at their mobile. They have their earpiece and they get their feedback instructions from their tutor via the earpiece. But based on the location where they are and the places they visit.
Okay, and who is giving the feedback? I didn't get that.
The tutor. The tutor is giving the feedback. Actually, he's preparing the feedback and the assignments, but he can do it live as well. There's a little bit Big Brother's watching you because you have 10 students walking in Florence and the tutor can see on his computer where everyone is walking and what he's doing. But it's very nice. Students liked it, at least.
In which context was this developed?
In the Netherlands, we have SURF Foundation. They are subsidizing many, innovative IT solutions. So I connected that call with a real demand from our Faculty of Cultural Science, where students are actually doing field work. But they are doing it in a traditional way, going with one big group from place to place. And with the mobile augmented reality, they can go individually or they can go with two people.
Okay, and what in this case does augmented mean? Is it really the tutor sitting in the learner's ear?
Both. He can still look at a screen and see additional text and photos from the churches and buildings he sees. But the idea is for the pilot is that you use your eyes to see the real thing, and the audio augmented reality for the extra augmented information.
Okay, as a teacher, where could I get more information on this?
I promised Graham that I will send a web link. I will email him a web link you can put beside this podcast.
Okay, thank you very much then. The learners will have, or the audio, the listeners will have to pop into our podcast and then read the URL to get more information. Thank you very much then.
Welcome. Thank you.
Hello, and next one is Jay Cross from the Internet Time Alliance. Can you introduce yourself a little bit?
Well, I'm Jay Cross with the Internet Time Alliance from Berkeley, California. And this is, I think, my ninth EDUCA. So I'm a true believer in what goes on here.
Okay. You were introduced to me speaking about ethics. What do you think on this online EDUCA is most striking in terms of ethics?
I'm sorry, in terms of?
In terms of ethical considerations.
Ethical considerations? Well, I hadn't thought about that at all. I mean, there's a theme that accompanies all the new looks in learning, and that's trust. And that's expecting people to sort of be right with the world. I mean, when folks here talk about how do we control this, how do we measure this, how do I know it's going to work, how do I know they're not going to screw up, you say, hold it. Generally, if you set high expectations of people, they live up to them. Conversely, if you set low expectations, they'll be glad to, you know, live down to them. And I think it behooves us to be above board, transparent, inspiring, and get the best out of our people.
When I hear this, I also can hear words like assessment in that. So how do I control this evaluation and stuff like that? But what do you think is the role of the industry versus research on this online EDUCA?
On online EDUCA or on the learning that we're talking about at online EDUCA? I mean, I think control is an illusion that we've got to give up. we've had this idea that we could manage people, we could sort of control what they think. And managers have been kidding themselves for a long time on that. That may work if you're picking up bricks or, you know, filing gears in a factory, but that doesn't work with knowledge workers. And just about everything here is either on knowledge work, which tends to be cerebral, but industrial age in its underpinnings and look at efficiency, or what I call conceptual work, which is dreaming up new things, creating the new patent. That's where the money is, where the competitive advantage is.
Okay, and one last sentence.
I'm going to be greedy, okay, because I want to ask you a question about what you were doing at Oxford recently and what happened. Go on, tell the world.
Well, from my perspective, the debate that we had at Oxford was just...
Tell us about the debate. Come on.
I'm sorry?
Tell us about the debate. A lot of people don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, and there's going to be a full video put up very soon now. I'm writing an article about it. But we were asked, the House position was that informal learning was sort of a passing fad. And I happily was on the other side of the argument. And when we pointed out that, hold it, this is part of life, this is the way people learn, the academics came back with the argument, oh, learning needs guardrails. And I said, no, learning needs letting people live up to their potential, no guardrails, you know? If a teacher is just putting up guardrails, I'd be thrown out of the classroom, in my opinion. And luckily, we had enough people say that they agreed with that, because we won the debate by more than 5-1. And it was... It was lots of fun.
That's a great end. Thanks very much indeed, Jay.
You're quite welcome. Pleasure talking with you.
Okay, I'll hand over to Judith, who will be talking to Linda Castaneda. Go on.
Welcome, Linda Castaneda. It's good to have you here. Maybe you want to introduce yourself a little bit.
Well, only a little bit. There is not much to say about me. I'm coming from the University of Murcia in Spain, and I'm here for talk about many, many things about educational technology and about, indeed, I'm here to present to all of you Madhouse of Ideas, the project. My dear friend, Cristina Costa from the University of Salford, and myself are working on the English-speaking version of a project called El Bazar de los Locos, in Spanish. And we are going to start to collect stories about Twitter experiences, how people have changed their lives using Twitter, or how people have changed their perspective, sharing different kind of things with other people in Twitter. And we want to collect as many stories as possible. And also we want to publish it on the blog, madhouseofideas.org. And we want to collect also the comments and to generate a cool debate around it. And after that, with the material we can collect, we want to publish a book, a Creative Commons licensed book.
So it's very much about real life?
It's very much about real life in Twitter. And it's another way to see the real life. It's our real life standing. And I think it's about enthusiasm. It's about the wonderful environment for sharing enthusiasm that Twitter is. So please, this is a call for participation. It's for free. It's only behind this is only Cristina and myself and all of you. If you want to collaborate with us, writing an article, writing comments, or even only reading us is a cool experience. We friendly invite you to participate.
Can you please tell us a little bit about the educational concept behind your idea?
The educational concept behind our idea is very joined to PLN, the enrichment of personal learning networks around all this kind of live streaming tools is a quite interesting concept. Indeed, in our time, one of the most interesting ways to explore is the enrichment of our personal learning environments. And personal learning networks are definitely a crucial part of our personal learning environment. And Twitter and other live streaming tools, online tools, are a crucial part, a key point on this kind of personal learning networks and discuss, and in our personal learning environments. People is going to arrive to our personal learning networks, and it's a fantastic way to talk about lifelong learning, definitely.
So you want to have people reflect about their own living? You want to reflect people their own living, about their own living, and using digital tools?
No, using specifically Twitter. How have you experienced, how have you lived your experience on Twitter? What reflection can you make around it? What is your story about Twitter? Your story, your life in Twitter, or maybe only your impressions or your feelings even? Because we think this kind of knowledge about the Twitter experience is interesting only for, not only for them to reflect, but also for other people who is maybe starting to be in Twitter. So for them it's quite interesting.
Thank you very much for this interview. It was great to learn more about your madhouse ideas.
The madhouse of ideas. I will invite you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Next will be Judith talking to Andy Plack about innovations and implementations of mobile learning in classrooms.
Welcome, Andy Plack. It is great to have you here. We are pushed again. We're always pushed. So we decided that we would like to talk about policy, practitioners, making of digital ideas and innovation.
Yeah, it's interesting being an online educator. I mean, we've got loads of researchers here doing interesting things, but what I'm interested about is how you make that happen in the big scale amongst teachers and what they're doing in the classroom. So it's great to talk about maybe using Twitter or some other technology, but how do we actually make teachers use it and want to use it, and picking things that are going to work, really.
How do you motivate teachers to use these tools?
Well, if anybody's got any ideas, they can talk to me straight away because I'd like to hear about it. I think teachers are all passionate, mostly passionate about their subject. And I think the subject is a good way in. And I think that we're in a very special time where some of the tools that were once very geeky are becoming more mainstream and much more accessible and much easier to use. And the growth of mobile is probably one of those areas where that's starting to happen. If you look at the growth of mobile Facebook, it's absolutely huge.
Do you address teachers when they are already teaching or already during their education?
Yeah, I think one of the big challenges we face is looking at people going through initial teacher training. They do a small amount of exposure to e-learning, ICT, innovation, whatever. And that's great. And they may pick up that and take it into their classroom practice. But I think with the teachers already teaching in a school, it's quite difficult to get that innovation to spread from one school to another. And I think it's almost more difficult to get it spread within one school, within the school, rather than from another school. So for example, if you're a teacher working in one school, in one area of the country, somebody in another area of the country may hear about it, but somebody in your school that you're working in may not realize you're doing it because they're in a different subject area, or they don't talk in that kind of way.
What is about sustainability? Do you have to start all over each year when your teachers are on the market? Or are there any mechanisms where teachers are teaching themselves, or any other kind of sustainability mechanisms?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. If you look at the growth of teachers on Twitter, and there are quite a lot of teachers on Twitter if you look around, and it's worth having a look at Twitter, people that are educators and not just researchers. There's quite a lot of emerging evidence now that people are sharing very readily ideas. They're actually saying, I've got a lesson tomorrow talking about a certain subject. Has anybody done it before? Any links and that kind of stuff? And I think if you're a newly qualified teacher, that could save you months of work. Going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning because somebody has given you an idea, they've tried this for their students. And you don't just take the idea, you take the idea, you change it, you make it local, you make it to your context and to your culture.
Which resources would you recommend to teachers?
I'm a huge fan of using the human resource of Twitter. I mean, Twitter is often described by a guy I follow on Twitter called Digital Maverick as Twitter is my Google. If he's got a problem, he puts a question out to Twitter and people come back. I'm quite a huge fan of Twitter as a resource for sharing that information. It may only be 140 characters, but 140 characters can be enough.
Yeah. So it's collaborative teaching and learning.
Yeah, and very rapid prototyping, things happening very, very quickly and ideas being changed and shared. And I think we are in a very unique time when ideas can spread internationally, and I'll talk about that. I mean, I quite often tweet late at night when my friends in New Zealand are awake, and if you look at how ideas spread around the world by the following morning, it is quite amazing, actually.
Andy Black, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Next is some piece of music, and I hope you stay tuned in and come back later when we will be talking to Ilona. Welcome back on Online Educa 2010. We are the official radio show on Pont Tedescu, Sounds from the Bazaar, Sounds of the Bazaar. Now I'll be talking next to Ilona about e-portfolios. Can you tell me a little bit about e-portfolios and what you are planning to do with it?
Hi, Klaus. First of all, it's really funny to be at this side, because last year I was asking the question, so it's interesting. Yeah, so ePortfolios, I was presenting this year our ePortfolio initiative that we established in Berlin. And as a good example of how you can foster readiness in organizations to implement ePortfolios as an example of change management. So, you know, the problem is that in Germany there's still a lack of In many organizations, lack of understanding what e-portfolios actually are, what can you do with them, what concepts there are. You know, people produce a lot of technology and try to implement this, but the other thing is, you know, what can you do with this? How can you implement this? What types of applications there are, and how can you didactically design e-portfolios? You know, and how do you prepare the users to actually, you know, be motivated to use them. So we presented this idea of, you know, fostering from the bottom up, like exchanging knowledge and getting different partners together from education, from industry, from higher education, from secondary education, so that, you know, people network, exchange ideas, they talk to each other, they find out where they have the needs to implement e-portfolios, and they can support each other. So this is what our initiative is about.
Just for the non-experts, what are e-portfolios, by the way?
That's a very good question. It's a very broad concept, and some people think, oh, e-portfolio is maybe like a job application, portfolio. It could be a part of this. This is basically, e-portfolio to me means that you document certain things in the learning process, that you reflect on things, and that you present parts of what you documented and reflected based on the goals that you have. For instance, for the job application, but also for further learning, for accreditation of learning maybe, but also for your personal development as well, so that you can just check where you were a year ago, where you are now, and you can see how you personally developed. This is also an important aspect of e-portfolios.
Okay, thank you. Are there any standardizations in e-portfolios? Because just recently I've been asked if there was something like a guideline, something like common headlines for e-portfolios.
There was this, there is an initiative started in 2003, ePortfolios for All. They developed a lot of materials. They were a very well-known project, like the Mozart Project, who developed a lot of guidelines and materials on how to use ePortfolios. So there is material, there are guidelines, there are some good examples across Europe. So I think we should really, just dig a little bit deeper, see what's there and how we can use it.
Okay. Thank you very much, first of all. Who is next? Next is Judith talking to Jan Markovic and Grainy Connolly about open educational resources. So, Judith.
Yeah, welcome you two. I'm talking to Grainy Connolly and Jan Markovic. Grainy, could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, thanks for the invite. My name's Grainy, and I'm based at the Open University in the UK, and I'm a professor of e-learning there.
And your interests are?
Very broad ranging, anything to do with e-learning, but in particular at the moment I'm looking at open educational resources and new approaches to design for helping teachers to make better use of technologies.
And Mark? Sorry, Jan.
We get to the last name. Thanks for having me. I work at the Center of E-Learning of AGH University in Krakow, Poland, where we do different type of stuff dealing with e-learning. Among others, we open an OER repository that I came here to talk about. And I'm also interested a lot in use of social software and Web 2.0 tools in education. That I would say are the main interests, educational interests.
I was told that you both are especially interested in open educational resources. Can you please let us know what open educational resources are?
Okay, so this is something that's come about in the last 5 years or so, particularly initiated by people like UNESCO and the Hewlett Foundation in the States. And essentially, open educational resources are resources that are free. The idea behind the movement is that education is a right, that resources should be free for learning. And so there's been a huge amount of work in terms of developing global repositories of OERs worldwide that are available for teachers and learners.
So there are big political implications, let's say?
Hopefully so. I think there's different situation, different countries. I think where you come from, it's a completely different stuff than in Poland where we start, but still there's more and more encouragement going also up from the European Union to develop such stuff, to provide education to as many people as possible, and OERs are a tool to achieve that more effectively.
So it's a bottom-up approach?
I think there's a mixture. I think there has been international support through people like UNESCO and the Hewlett Foundation, but also a lot of organisations. For example, my own organisation, the Open University in the UK, has a repository called OpenLearn, which is funded through the Hewlett Foundation. And there's been very strong strategic support from senior management in terms of the promotion and use of OER.
So the final question, open educational resources, software available for everybody.
not just software, but most of all kind of content that you can give. It might be simulations, videos, curricula, articles, whatever, anything that you can use for education that is free to use and, more importantly, reuse as you wish if you're a teacher or a student.
Thank you very much. We will have another interview later with Gronja, and then we are going to talk about Cloudworks. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I have the great pleasure now to speak to Carl Royal from the Center for Development and Research in Education from the University of Wolverhampton. And you're into game-based learning, aren't you?
Yes, it's. I've been looking at game-based learning for about 10 years now, from developing a game with a company called Desk, Doomed Ed, which got 60,000 downloads, putting science into education. And now looking more at the research angle on whether games actually do produce learning outside of schools, and also the integration of games into schools as well.
Okay, and you're looking at the use of games, learning in games, inside and outside school, if I got that right?
Yeah, and also, well, two things. The main first thing is probably about whether games can have any effect on reading skills and problem-solving skills. So we're looking at research into that outside of school in the informal setting. In the more formal setting, we're looking at whether games-based pedagogy can be transferred into the classroom environment, so from the digital to the analog.
What games are we talking about? Shooters, simulations, or what?
Well, any game, really, because the way that kids play game, it's quite stratified. So, but the two key games we're looking at the moment are Animal Crossing, for younger kids, because it's been reported anecdotally that it really boosts kids' reading skills, and also FIFA 10 for boys who don't like to read, basically. So what we're trying to do is do a study on those to see if they actually do boost reading skills, if we can do that.
If I am a parent or teacher, is it necessarily based on consoles, or is it rather based on browsers?
I think most games are cross-platform, aren't they? But I think Animal Crossing is Nintendo-based, and obviously the FIFA series are cross-platform, but console-based, yeah, pretty much.
How welcome are games in school context or in classroom context? I could imagine that games are somehow kind of subversive still to traditional classroom education.
Well, I think we need to make a distinction between educational games and serious games and commercial games. So commercial games, yes, I would say, you know, they don't really fit within a classroom situation, although they can be used as a curriculum stimulus. The guys in Scotland at the Consularium have done a lot of work on that. So there's lots of space for computer games in education. It's just some people have yet to realise it, that's all. But it's really the most important thing is tapping into the skills and habits of the learners. I mean, they've got, you know, game-based learning grammar within them. So, you know, if we can utilise that in education, that's not a bad thing, I don't think.
Okay, I'm kind of happy that I can clearly hear your distinction between commercial games, free games, serious games, and so on. But for me, so the kind of controversial question is, if you do games and mix it up with learning, do you then take the fun off from the games, or do you enhance learning with fun?
I think the real trick is to make a game that does both, so that kids realize they're learning, but they also, it's still a game, so it looks like a game, feels like a game, and smells like a game. I've only seen a couple of educational games that do that. One's called Naraba World, which is done by a Spanish company that's released last week. That was a very good game. And there's another game called The Small Business Game, which is a really nice, serious game. But definitely, games should be games and be outside of school, I think, the commercial games. But there's lots of learning that happens outside of school. So maybe we should focus on learning rather than, you know, schooling and directly.
Okay, and from your experiences, is it allowed to use the term learning in front of the kids when you're talking about games. So is this mixture welcome by the kids?
Well, and I think kids realize they do learn things from games, you know, but whether it's relevant to what they do in schools is another matter. For example, my son, who's 12, can recite all the countries of the world because of his playing FIFA 10. So they learn a lot of stuff, but it's the transfer, really, of that learning into schools that we're quite interested in, whether it's in terms of the learning pedagogy of games into the classroom pedagogy, or whether it's actually using games in the classroom. But essentially, I think games are games, and they should be left for people to enjoy in a large way.
Okay, and last question. Looking into the future, game-based learning is now a very, very new field, I guess. And what would you say, how will this field develop in the next 5 years, let's say?
I think pretty much you're going to see games going into all walks of life. Augmented reality games is a big new thing. The idea that everything in life is about a game, basically. So that, you know, when you... a lot of people have been talking about, you know, when you go to Tesco's or the supermarket, you'll get points for things, and that'll enhance your life, and it'll be all like a little game you can play in real life. So the gamification of life is allegedly the next big thing. But I think that's probably a bridge too far, really. But social gaming is huge, as we know already. So I can see it being more invasive into all parts of life, really. And that'll be more fun for everyone, won't it? Basically, hopefully.
Okay, we can see that there are lots of transformations going on in learning. And now I'm handing over to Jen Hughes, who will be talking to Magda Balica from Romania. Okay, thank you very much.
Hi, Magda. We've worked together for, what, 10 years, 12 years? So this morning's not so much an interview, more a sort of gossip and a catch-up session.
Okay.
What are you doing right now in Romania?
Currently I'm a researcher in education, but I'm engaged in a lot of teacher training programs for the moment.
Teacher training is a big issue for the EU at the moment. We've had all sorts of initiatives. They're trying to derive a standard set of competences. They're trying to regulate the profession. What's your opinion on that?
I think, in a way, I understand the effort that Europe is putting on that. We need, in a way, maybe some guidelines, or we need to cooperate more at the European level. But in the same time, there are a lot of different contexts. And from my experience, I can see that actually it's so depending on the children you are working for and the issues that you are dealing with. And sometimes I think that it's so difficult to make the same standards and the same qualifications for a teacher in, in the middle of Bucharest, which is quite a cosmopolitan town, and some kind of isolated rural areas in mountains in Romania, for instance.
So it's difficult across Romania, and across Europe it's well nigh impossible.
Almost, I think this is an idea, because actually I think that also there are some cultural issues discussing about, you know, how teaching are dealing with students in class. And I think it's more and more important how actually we try to build that confidence of teacher in our days when everybody seems that feeling the school like in a kind of crisis or something.
Do you think things have changed much since you started working in teacher training?
Well, I think it's a tough question. I had, let's say, 10 years experience. And my feeling is that actually teachers are less confident in their profession, in a way, because also we as a society, we are looking at the teachers not so in a nice manner. For instance, in Romania in the last months, the salaries of teachers were cutting down with 25%, starting from anyway a low percentage comparing to other profession. But in another way, they are in a way feeling lost in handling the issues, new issues that students have in class now. And
By the way, being here on online Naduka, maybe technology is something that frightens some of them.
So are you doing much training around the use of technologies for learning? I mean, is that something that's high on the agenda for your teachers?
Yeah, I mean, in the last few years especially, we try to bring teachers close to technology and try to make kind of meaning for them, because I was amazed here in Berlin how many tools we have, how technology have developed in last years. And I think it's a kind of parallel development. We have huge amounts of tools and technology, but on the other side, actually in schools, teachers are still doing their way in an old fashion, which is not necessarily bad. But how to put this together, it's a big challenge, not only in Romania, but also in Europe, I think.
Magda, that was great. Thank you very much. We'll have coffee together afterwards and catch up. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, I'm handing over to Jen, who is speaking to Dr. Morsek from Africa and a UNESCO project, if I got that right.
Hi, Mor.
Yes, Jen, hi.
I'm really liking your name. I told you this yesterday, but it's Welsh for sea, and I think that's a great name. So can you tell us more about where you come from?
Yeah, I'm coming from Senegal. Yeah, and I'm the manager of the Senegal Distance Learning Center and the president of the Association of African Distance Learning Centers, which is a network set up by the World Bank in collaboration with the African governments. And we have actually about 15 centers operational in the continent and part of a wider network of 120 centers spread all over the world.
So what do you actually teach? What goes on in these centers?
In these centers, we teach actually various areas of interest, actually, from administration, management, health, agriculture, finance, banking. So we really develop capacities in most of these areas. And the main objective of these centers and this network is to build and to develop the capacities in Africa. Because we think that what we really need in Africa is not just money. We need really to develop competencies. We need to develop skills, you know, of mainly the decision makers, you know, in order to enable them to really lead the development process. So,
About building capacity in your own country.
Yes, it's really problem of building, and I prefer the word developing capacities. You know, because the capacities are there. We need just to develop them. So the objective is really about developing the capacities of Africans and to connect them and to really enable them to be in contact with the external world, you know, to be connected with all the other continents, because you can't develop yourself within. You need to develop yourself also being in contact with the rest of the world. And Africa is part of this world, and we think that in Africa, they must know what's going on all over around Africa. And the ITC used in education and training, you know, is a tool which can enable us to be in contact, you know, with this knowledge available all over the world and to share the experiences of other people around the world and also to share the experiences we have as Africans.
That was going to be my next question. What particular expertise have you got that you can share with us?
I think that in Africa, many people, they think that we need to take everything from outside, you know. You have so many wonderful things going on in Africa that we can share with the rest of the world. I think that in terms of even social behaving, in terms of, you know, the way to develop people, because development is not only about financial means, you know. It's not about only having financial wealth, you know. It's also about having, I think, mental development, you know, a sort of, you know, social development. People, they need to interact as normal human beings. They need to help each other. They need really to give more respect to human beings. I think that in Africa, we can share this kind of values and with the rest of the world.
Well, I was talking yesterday to Foster from Africa Works, and he said one of the things that he values particularly is how good at networking and community building that you are. And I thought that was interesting, the fact that he said, so many places in Africa, we don't need to network, we do it naturally, we do it automatically, we've been doing it for centuries.
Yeah, I think that to network in Africa is something just very normal. It's not an exception. You know, this is how we live. We live within communities. And when you live within communities, you network, obviously. So this is not what we learn from anybody else. I think that people from outside, they must learn how to network from us, because this is our way of life every single day. So networking is something in our blood, is something that we come in this world with that. So we can share it, and we can teach much more, you know, about how to network with people in Africa.
I think that's great. Thank you very much, Mo.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good luck with your project.
Thank you.
And where can we get more information? Do you have a website address?
Yes, we have a website address, and you can consult the www.gdln.org or the www.aadlc.com.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, thank you. And now it's a great pleasure to welcome Russell Stannard at our stand from University of Warwick, and he's running a website on teacher training with video. And what's the URL called?
It's called www.teachertrainingvideos.com, and it's all completely free. It's an open educational resource for teachers to help them to use technology, and I basically use screen capture technology to record myself using all sorts of different technologies like wikis and blogs and the talk I did yesterday on Twitter. And the idea is that the teachers can come on, they can use the videos, and they can learn how to use all these different technologies.
Okay, so as a teacher, I get videos that tell me how to use technology in classrooms. Is this user-generated content?
Well, no. Basically, what happens is I have a huge great network. I've got about 4,500 followers on Twitter, and they're feeding into me, Russell, this is an interesting website, this is an interesting technology. I then look into the technologies, and I learn them. And if I think they're useful, and I often test them out in class, then I will make a set of training videos to show other teachers how to use that technology, and also to give them suggestions of how they might actually use it in the class. So I show them how the technology works, and also throw out suggestions of things that I've actually done with my students. I try to add about 2 or 3 sets of videos every month.
Speaking about learning with video in general, what would you say is the added value of video?
Well, there is some interesting research. There's some interesting research by a guy called Richard Meyer, and he's looked into how video helps the recall. That was actually where my first interest came in technology, because of Richard Meyer's work, or my first interest in video came, because he's kind of proved that there seems to be, you know, evidence that it helps recall and helps people to memorize things. So I think it's really, really important, and I think it's becoming really big now in education because it's so accessible and so easy to do now.
What do you think about using videos in classroom? Does this make sense?
Yeah, I think it does. I think in a way, for me, the more interesting aspect of using video is outside of the class. So in what we can get the students to do when they go home, and they might go online and watch a video and consume some information and then, you know, act upon that and use it in a certain way. Definitely can be used in class as well to highlight points and bring together the lesson. But I think it's particularly interesting outside of the class because it can make it so much more interesting, the types of activities and things that you get the students to do either in pairs or groups or on their own.
Okay, which recommendations, just briefly, would you give for learner-generated videos outside classrooms?
Well, there are absolutely loads and loads of places. I mean, the TeacherTube is an incredible source of information, but there are so many of these kind of content-driven sites now that are available. I mean, it's just amazing the amount of, you know, I mean, apart from just YouTube, which itself is an incredible place for content and directing students towards content there, but there are just loads of them now. TeacherTube is a fantastic one. There's lots of great content on there.
Okay. And just one last question then. At the moment, video, I think, makes about 50% of all internet traffic worldwide. But what is your outlook for the future? Because at the moment, videos are very, very great in size. And this is also where the traffic comes from. But the usage clearly shows the relevance of the production and the reception of videos. But what's your outlook on it?
Well, my outlook, I mean, I think that will increase. I think there'll be more and more content available. The biggest problem that we're having at the moment with the amount of video content is where it's being kept. And what we really need is big repositories of well-categorised and organised metadata video content that teachers can access really, really easily. And that's a bit of the problem, really. There's a lot of open educational resources, there's a lot of content available, but it's scattered everywhere. This is, unfortunately, is one of the developments that's taking place because people are doing pockets of work all over the world. There are very, very few very big repositories, the biggest one obviously being YouTube, but there are so many other repositories of content. So this is going to create, this problem is going to get bigger and bigger, I think, in the future, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you very much, then. It was very, very interesting, and now we are heading kind of over. Jin, is there something about this conference to say? Are there any advertisements now?
I've just got one or two advertisements. Sadly, we're coming to the end of today's edition of Sounds of the Bazaar. Firstly, I'd like to tell everybody that a complete recording of yesterday's programme and today's programme will be available on the pontedusky.org website. The other thing we have are some extended interviews, some podcasts on subjects which we felt we couldn't do justice to on the programme. They will also be available on the Pontedusky website. I'd also like to tell people about the Mobile Learning Conference to be held in Bremen on March the 21st, 22nd, 2011. More information from the londonmobilelearning.net/Bremen. That's londonmobilelearning.net/Bremen. I also want to do a puff for a great new book. It's not one of ours, so I can do this. On current trends in mobile learning. Awesome book from Nottingham University. It's called Education in the Wild. So Google Education in the Wild. I saw a copy yesterday. It's awesome. The other thing I'd like to talk about just briefly is that Sounds of the Bazaar has spawned a twin radio station. We've got students in San Marino in Italy who are going to be broadcasting live from San Marino 1 from January. More information on the Pontedusky website, but we're really looking forward to working with them and producing some great radio. And finally, we'd quite like to say from Sounds of the Bazaar to all the students in Italy and in the UK who are doing their bit to protest against government policies and against the cutbacks in education, just to say solidarity from Sounds of the Bazaar, and from the conversations I've had, solidarity from half the delegates here at Online Educare. So good luck, we're thinking about you. Just like to say thank you now to Klaus and to Judith. This is the first time they've done live radio. Klaus, thank you very much. Judith, that was great. And thanks very much to Dirk on the mixing desk. So from me, Jenny Hughes, thank you for listening. And we hope to be here next year. So this is Sounds of the Bazaar going offline on Online Educare Berlin 2010. Thank you.